The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today we're doing the last of our election shows for the April 4th primary, and we have in studio Ms. Monica Curls and Ms. Jay Gray, who are both write-in candidates for the Kansas City, Missouri School Board Subdistrict 4 School Board Director position, which will be elected next Tuesday, April 4th. Disclaimer: this discussion is about the write-in ballot for the Kansas City Public School District, Subdistrict 4 election. The discussion is to inform and educate the public about the Subdistrict 4 write-in election. We will not make any endorsements or recommendations about who you should vote for. It's more important that you get out that day and exercise the right to vote. So good morning, ladies. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning.
So Ms. Curls, you want to talk the coin toss? So this is a write-in campaign. So Before we get into talking a little bit about yourself, tell us, what is a write-in campaign?
So a write-in campaign is that there's no person that's going to be listed on the ballot for this particular elected position. So it's going to mention Kansas City Public Schools Subdistrict 4 school director, and it's going to say no candidate filed, because no candidate that had submitted their name and signatures were able to get certified in the time frame. And so as a result, there was no candidate that has filed, but Jaquita and I have both asked to be considered for a write-in. And so there'll actually be a sign at the, or a piece of paper at least, at the polling locations where that are within the fourth sub-district, where it'll indicate these two people have asked to be write-in candidates. Now, of course, anyone can write in whatever name they want, but, you know, we have indicated we specifically want this position. So that's why we're campaigning.
And for a write-in campaign, people have to remember, you have to spell the name correctly.
That is right.
So if your last name is Red, it has to be R-E-D. It can't be R-A-D. People have to spell it correctly or that vote will not count.
That's so correct.
And Jay, what are the boundaries for the fourth subdistrict?
So the fourth subdistrict is very large. So it's primarily everything from, I say, about Truman Road to Meyer, everything in between that. And then when it comes to boundaries going east, most of it starts at Prospect and goes east, but there are pieces of Paseo and Troost embedded as well.
Yes, it is a jagged, it's the largest subdistrict, and it goes all the way to the edge of the city. So people out near Royal Stadium will be voting on you all.
Yes.
So, Monica, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from Kansas City? 2 minutes.
Yeah, so name is Monica Curls, born and raised here in Kansas City. I've actually only gone to Catholic schools my entire life, from preschool on through my master's degrees, but have always just been passionate about education. That passion and drive for education came from my parents. And so, yeah, went to Georgetown University, got a Bachelor's of Science in Foreign Service there, worked a little bit, went back in 2012 to get two master's degrees from Avila University, one in Master's of Arts in Management with an emphasis in project management, and then a Master's of Science in Organizational Development Psychology. So came back to the Kansas City, lived in D.C. for a while, also lived overseas for a couple of years, and then came back to the Kansas City area in 2004 and have just, you know, been working professionally and then also working in the community. Pretty much my entire career has either been for a government contractor or directly for the government, and so have had to deal a lot with policy and following regulations and stuff like that. So that I bring that experience to the board. I also have been very active in the community. I was on the board of Niles Home for Children for a while, also served as its president. I was on the board, a commissioner, currently a commissioner for the Housing Authority of Kansas City, Missouri. Am also on the board of the Luce Foundation, and am on the board of the Junior League of Kansas City, Missouri. So those are some of my active placements in the community, and of course now running for to be the representative of the 4th Subdistrict for the Kansas City Public Schools Director.
So, Jay, can you tell us listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I'm also born and raised here in Kansas City, Missouri. So I did grow up in the inner city. So I am a former KCPS attendee. I graduated from University Academy, however. So my entire both career and education has been centered on just kind of getting better opportunities for students in Kansas City. So at a very young age, about 13 or 14, I realized that I felt I could make the biggest difference in the education sector when it came to where can I be of assistance. And so with that, I went and got a bachelor's degree in history from the University of Missouri, Kansas City, where my research focus was actually the effects of de facto segregation on the Kansas City Public School District. And so how we got from pre-integration to the at that point we did not have accreditation. And then following that, I did go get a master's degree in higher education from Teachers College, Columbia University in New York. And so there, my research kind of focused on minority student success, those underprivileged students, what happens to them after they are leaving high school, and how can we focus on bettering those outcomes. So with all of that, in between, I have worked in many KCPS schools. I've had many different positions. Primarily, I like to work in the high school settings. So my last position in KCPS was actually as a college advisor at Central High School. And that is just really a big spark for me. My students at Central helped me realize that a lot of things are not equitable, even in our city. So like Monica, I am very involved in the community. So the only difference is I have not sat on a lot of these city boards and things like that. My community engagement is actually more personable. I go to the community events. I am in a lot of different community organizations, and I'm just out there getting to know the people in person.
So we're doing an alternating format. So since Ms. Curls took the first question, it's your turn. What made you decide to run to be a member of the Kansas City, Missouri School District School Board?
So school board is something that has always been a goal of mine. So I initially thought it was something that I had to be older for. I think that is a big misconception, especially in Kansas City. It's even something that I've been getting while I'm running. Like, one of the first questions people ask me is like, how old are you? Like, you know, my education and my experience isn't what's important. They want to know like, well, how old are you? Like, and so for me growing up in KC, I didn't want that to be an issue. And so initially it did take me to not wanting to run. So once I did decide, like, you know, my age does not mean anything. I have the credentials. I have the experience. I decided that now was my time to do that.
I am on the air. You have to call one of the colleagues on me later. Thank you.
So Ms. Curl, same question.
So I think after, you know, different community members, particularly those around education, realized that there was no one certified for the ballot, a couple of my friends who work in that education space approached me and were like, would you be willing to consider running for office? And initially I said no. You know, I grew up in a political family. I know politics is a thankless job. I've been avoiding it for the last 49 years of my life. And so, you know, didn't really think that I would be pursuing any political position, especially the one that you don't even get paid for. But while I was trying to make that decision, I had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Collier. She was at a presentation, and, you know, I heard about her. I mean, she talked about herself, how she got into education. I heard the passion that she has for children and the district in particular. At that time, she was the interim superintendent, and thankfully they've made her the full superintendent now. Signed the contract last night, yay. So really started getting inspired after hearing her talk, and I started thinking, okay, maybe I can do this. And then, you know, had a chance to talk to her, and she was like, you know, we need people, board members who can be advocates for the district. And I knew that my experience and effectiveness would allow me to do that.
So, Monica, what is, in your opinion, what is the role of the school board director?
So school board directors are mainly responsible for helping to establish the policy for the district. They have one employee, that's the superintendent. And so they evaluate the superintendent's performance. They help to provide her with guidance. And well, since it's a her now, they'll help to provide her with guidance, kind of set the goals for the district that they would then, and through policy, help to establish that framework in which the superintendent is able to work and direct her direct reports as far as how to execute on that.
So, Jay, same question. What is the role of the school board director?
I mean, it's very difficult to give a different answer than what Monica gave because that's what they are for, right? But I think something I would add, I do feel like they are advocates for the district. They're advocates for the families and the communities. And so as part of making those decisions and creating these priorities and setting these goals is making sure that you hear the voice of your community and, you know, everyone who is going to be affected by these changes and using also implementing that in the decisions that are made.
So now we get to a little bit of the meat of the matter. So in your opinion, Jay, what do you see as the biggest issue facing the district? And how does your background help you to look at addressing that?
So the biggest issue facing the district is finances. I think that it ties into almost every other problem that the district has. It comes from a lack of resources or financial resources specifically. And so something that I believe I can be assistance with. So the board is currently putting together a bond plan, right? So a bond that has not been passed in 60 years here in Kansas City is something that generally the community does not get behind and support. So the question is, how can the board get the community support in that bond plan? As somebody who is very involved in the community, very involved in different community organizations, I have the ability to speak to people about what it is, how it influences them, how it will impact their organizations, their children, the community as a whole. And this isn't just, you know, KCPS stakeholders and families. Everybody in the city has to vote on this. And so with that, it does take a board member who is going to be very active and engaged in the community. We can't expect them to come to us. We got to go to them.
So, Monica, same question. So go ahead.
So I agree with Jaquita. Obviously, the finances, the financial stability of the district is very important because student achievement is very much tied to that. If we don't have the resources, we can't offer students the programming that allows them to excel. We can't offer them the class, other opportunities like a robotics class or AP classes that would allow them to excel and be more ready to be successful at in college if that's what they choose to do, or even be successful if they decide to go directly into the workforce, like with, you know, a union apprentice program or something like that. That, in addition to making sure that the programs that the district has, and this is once again tied to student achievement, we have great programming in the district, but we need to make sure that those successful programs are being replicated throughout the district instead of that we having one or two signature schools that have all the programming that's desired.
And one of the things that I saw being a former school board director was that mobility in the district. If you go into a classroom, you count 10 students, 4 of those students by the end of the year will no longer be in that classroom, and two of them will attend at least multiple schools, up to 4 just during that year. As we look at right now, rents are sky high, the inflation is high. What is your idea? How do we begin to solve that problem to keep a child in that same school where they start schools, where they would end school for that year?
So, well, one of the things right now, I had thought the policy was that we wouldn't make students change in the middle of a school year. Obviously, and that's one of the reasons why transportation is one of the most expensive line items in the district budget, because we do have students all over the district who, you know, in the middle of the school year, now they're living in a completely different area. But we recognize the importance of the stability of that student in order to further their educational goals. But once again, with finances, you know, with that, with that transportation line item being so expensive, when they move further away, it's harder for us to be able to bring them back to that school so they can have that stability. That's why I definitely support having some coordination and contributions, or working with the KCATA to try and see if they can assist us in particularly providing some of those transportation services for children that are that now live further away from their home school.
So Jay, same question.
All right. So as a coming from a KCPS family, this is something that has impacted, you know, myself. So I went to three middle schools just in sixth grade. And so I was one of those students who, you know, you're talking about here. And so with that, different things that the district can do. So there's some things you can't change, right? Someone kind of taking someone out of a school and putting them in another one as a parent's choice, those are things that can't change. But how can we make the process simpler? So better transitions and pipelines. I think that that's already something that the board has started discussing, and it is something that they're planning in that 2030 blueprint. But it's something that really needs to be kind of discussed. I think KCPS families, a lot of times when they're in their elementary schools or they're in their middle schools, they don't know what that natural next step is. What school am I supposed to go to? And even some something that was brought up in the board meeting yesterday with the two schools that they're closing, Longfellow and Truce. You know, they've redid some of these boundaries around them as far as what schools those students would go to. But the question was asked, like, okay, well, what middle schools do they go to now? And that hasn't been figured out yet, right? That pipeline has not been created. That is a piece of what causes some of these transitional problems. And so creating a pipeline and opportunity for parents in the community to understand these are the natural progressions of each school will be helpful.
So we now go back to Jay. And Jay, many students in the district have challenges around reading, and reading is critical to achievement. What can the district do to improve its reading scores?
I believe that there should be earlier interventions. So a lot of times we try to catch the students as we already kind of see that they're behind a grade level in reading and things like that. One, pre-K programs are very big and very, very beneficial. It's definitely something that the district should implement more of, especially for our inner city families and students who can't afford to send their children to the daycares or the Head Starts and things like that where they're learning. You also, you know, should put more resources in the schools that are available specifically to allow students to have this extra time to kind of catch up on this reading. So I went to Holiday, more of a Montessori school. So I know every school can't have a Montessori type learning, but what it benefits from is you learn at your own pace. And so if we can find out how to implement more learning at your own pace type strategies in these schools, I think it would be very beneficial.
So Monica, same question. Many of the district students face challenges around reading, and reading is critical to achievement. What can the district do to help?
So early childhood education is really key to that. Any of the statistics around reading levels talk about how you need to expose children to reading as early as possible. I remember the Harlem Children's Zone did some research that said that children of college educated parents tend to know 1900 words when they're like three. They've been exposed to like 1900 words, like, so when they first start speaking, they already have been exposed to a lot more language. Whereas children from more impoverished and undereducated homes only know about 400 words. So literally when they first start talking, they're already behind. And so how do we bring that early education into the system, those offerings available to children at lower cost or no cost, so that everyone has those opportunities. There are some great programs within the city, you know, great institutions like the Head Start, and so it's just a matter of making sure we get as many children into those systems as possible. But a lot of that's around finances and having the resources to do that.
So if you got a question for our candidates, give us a call this morning on Studio Line, 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. So, Monica, what is your – schools don't exist in a vacuum without the community. What is your plan to build community support with stakeholders, parents, to improve educational outcomes for students in the district?
So I think that there definitely is a lot of room for opportunity in that area. I'm not going to speak as to whether or not the district has been successful at that or not, but I think that obviously it starts with the students, making sure that we're engaging them in ways that we are allowing them to voice their opinions on things, engaging with the parents, both formally through, you know, SAC and DAC, or, you know, more informally and offering them opportunities to engage with the district in helpful ways, but then also engage with the board. One of the things I plan on starting as a board member would be a monthly coffee with curls, you know, where I just kind of sit up in different places. You know, it's really about being where they are. You know, so sitting up in either a coffee house or over, you know, just kind of having a table outside of the grocery store or any of those kind of places that allow me to interact with parents and other community members, and then all the stakeholders will need to be engaged as we continue to move forward in support of the district.
So, Jay, what is your plan to look at building community support with stakeholders and parents to improve educational outcomes?
So I'm very big on the voices of the community. So that includes parents, organizations, families, and in particular students. So with that, I've already kind of started, like I am already in a lot of different community organizations. And so with that, I do plan to continue working with these organizations and coming to them and listening to their voice. I also think that student voices are very important. A lot of people just kind of miss out on that. And so, you know, going to the schools and talking to the students and asking them about their experiences, asking them how some of these policies are affecting them and how, you know, about their experiences in general, I think are very important things to do. I believe in meeting people where they are. So I think a lot of people, you know, want to meet people halfway or, you know, make these opportunities. I'm going to games. I'm going to talent shows. I'm going to things that are already established that we know parents and families will be at. That is how you kind of connect with the community. You have to go even where the people who are not going to reach out to you and come find you and search are going to go so that you can interact.
So definitely we're getting some good information here, and it is not going to be easy for voters to make that choice, but we have two great candidates, so that's the most important part, because our children's future is at stake at this election. And one thing you'll figure out as a school board member, you start a legacy that never ends, because there are children that I talk to now who, they were adults now, they were children then. I remember you coming to my school, you do not know the number of people that you will impact and how that impact will have ripple effects down the road. So it's definitely a fulfilling position. And as Monica said earlier, I have never worked so hard for free in my life, ever. So, but I enjoyed every minute of it. So one of the things that I learned, and this goes to start with Jay, is that when I went to parent teacher conference and I talked with teachers said the parents that I need to talk with are not the parents that actually come to the school board meetings or they come to the parent teacher conference. How do we begin to, again, get those parents engaged with those students so that we improve the educational outcomes?
I love that question. And I think it ties a lot into the last question that you just asked, because again, that's why I'm very big on meeting them where they are. So, you know, I love the idea of coffee with curls. I think that's a great idea, right? But in general, the same parents who come to the board meetings are going to be the ones who come to that. So we have to figure out the ones who are not searching out for us, the ones who are not coming to these events, what do they go to? Like, does it take for, you know, people to go knock on doors, for people to go actually into the community? What organizations are they a part of? Do they work for? Like, we have to kind of figure out where they are and meet them there. And so I think that that's something very much that whoever is on this board should try to implement more of, is getting out into the community. One of the main things that I've kind of found as I'm doing this campaign, you know, I'll ask people, do you know who your school board member is, especially for the sub-districts? And a lot of times they don't. And for me, I think it's very important that the individuals know who their school board member is, how to contact them, how to, you know, if they have things that they want to say or that they think are important, how to talk to this person who is an advocate for them.
Monica, same question.
So, you know, unfortunately, it is a reality that we do have some disengaged parents in the district. And a lot of times their disengagement is impacting how those students are able to be, how they perform in the classroom. And so, you know, it's probably a bigger question as far as how do you engage parents that, you know, might not care as much for their children. I think a lot of it is about what other supports can we offer to that child if we have disengaged parents. I mean, obviously, we want to try and bring them in, but a lot of times parents are dealing with either, you know, trying to work multiple jobs or, you know, maybe having mental health issues or other things that might lead to them not being as engaged as they should be. I think our district has been particularly good about finding what are those other supports that we can provide both to that student and to that family that might facilitate them being more engaged in that student's life. And you know, and I was talking to someone in one of the other districts. I was like, do you have a department that deals with homelessness services? And they were like, what? And like, you know, but that's something that the district has because we recognize what our families need and we try and provide those supports around it. So I think that's gonna be also very key to being successful in that area is providing those supports for the whole family.
That is definitely, wraparound services are needed, and I will say I love the McKinley-Vento Act, which was an act which, for parents that are transitioning between places or maybe homeless, it helps to get students back to that school for that year. So if you are a parent or a student who's been homeless, you can call your district, doesn't have to be KCPS, any of the districts, the McKinley-Vento Act, and they will provide free transportation. And also for those, I had the saddened part to help a student who was on his own the senior year. He was living on his own, and he needed help with his senior fees and everything else. And that was a part of that act that helped that student pay for those fees. So there are some programs out there. The problem is sometimes, as you said, connecting the programs to the parents. So those are things you definitely need to look at. So we're going to start with Monica on this one first. Jay mentioned to this earlier, and you will, whichever one is elected will figure out that it's unfortunately the business of education, and you have to divide money between classrooms and buildings. But one of the things we see in Kansas City is tax incremental financing, or TIF, which plays a lot of role in the district receiving funds from projects such as One Light, Two Light, Three Light, because they get these huge tax abatements that result in the projects being undervalued on tax rolls. But essentially what happens is parents are sending a child to a school that may live in one of those places, but the district is not getting dollar for dollar, and they are essentially educating the child for free. All that said, how do we begin to look at TIF as a way, because we're looking at asking a bond levy. We want to do a bond levy, but we also have to make sure that the businesses pay their fair share versus that the entire burden is not put on the homeowner.
Yeah, so tax increment financing, when it was first introduced, was really about eliminating blight in the city and recognizing that for some areas of the city, it's really going to be challenging to get a developer to be willing to come in and invest in blighted areas. And so at the time, downtown was that blight. Right now, as we're looking to, I think they just announced they're almost finished with Three Light, and they're talking about a Four and a Five Light. The blight is not there anymore. So continuing to offer this tax increment finance that pulls money directly from the district, you know, isn't necessarily benefiting the city in the same way that it did when it was a more blighted area. I think it's also important if they do decide that this is a project that is actually eliminating blight and is necessary for the city, what are some other activities those developers can be engaged in that would help to make up for those financial downfalls for the district? Like, can they offer mentorships or internships? Can they help with like at cost construction, those kind of things?
So, Jay, same question.
So TIFs, I will use this opportunity to say this is why it's very important for you to get out and vote, not just for school board, but also for this city council election that is coming up, because these are things that go through your city council. So with the TIFs and the tax breaks and things like that, I do think that we should, you know, again, that is a city council thing. We have to elect individuals who are not as easy on a lot of these developers, who don't give these tax breaks and allow them to do this. Again, it was created for blighted areas. Personally, being from Kansas City, I do not believe that downtown, putting one light, two light, three light, like those, there's plenty of other blighted areas in the community if you want to do developments. And downtown is not it personally. but that isn't going to stop the fact that they're already going, right? That it's already there. So like Monica said, we have to start engaging with these business owners and figuring out how can you help benefit our schools. And so one of the things that I plan to do is talk to the KC Business Chamber of Commerce and see how can you support financially, mentorships, apprenticeships, whatever that looks like.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today we have Ms. Monica Curls and Ms. Jay Gray, who are write-in candidates for the Kansas City Public Schools School Board Director for the 4th Subdistrict. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. And today we're talking with Ms. Monica Curls and Ms. Jay Gray, who are write-in candidates for the Kansas City, Missouri School Board 4th Subdistrict election. So we are just talked about a little bit about TIF and how that impacts the district. And this year is a tax reassessment year, and we've heard Jackson County representatives say that taxes are looking at going up about 30%. Mm-hmm. And that KCPS receives 55 cents of every dollar that people, when we pay our income tax, I mean our property taxes. So how do we get voters to vote for a property tax levy when they're going to be seeing a 30% increase in their personal property, I mean on their property tax for their homes, which in turn could even speed up the mobility process because people have to move? And then we'll start with Jay on this question.
Yes, I think that's why it is the most important for this board. You know, every board is important to connect with the community, but specifically this upcoming board, because there are, you know, a lot of things that we would need that community input. Like you said, that those taxes are getting raised already. So for the board to come back and ask people for a bond, which is also additional taxes, like the community has to see the benefit in that. And so we have to speak to them and see, you know, how can we do this together? If your taxes are getting raised, what kind of bond, you know, can we put in place? What would make you guys comfortable? Same as the business community and things like that, because I've already talked to some people in the business community, and they've just kind of said, you know, generally they put the plan together and they bring it to us to support. We're not doing that. Like, we want to be a part of the process. So we have to include everybody in this bond planning process, especially because we know that our community and our city is already being affected by so many tax increases. There are like two tax increases on the ballot for April. Like, if those go through, that's that plus the 30% tax plus the bond that we're asking for next year. So, yeah.
So, Monica, same question.
Oh, so, sorry. It is, with the assessments going up potentially 30%, therefore increasing how much people would have to pay. You know, unfortunately, this has been a long time issue in that, you know, there were years that they were like, okay, the assessments have gone up, but we're going to let it pass. And they kind of kicked the ball down the road and made other legislators responsible for having to do the assessment and be more accurate as far as what those assessments are. So, I mean, but that's a whole different issue. I think that it does involve engaging with all the community stakeholders about how we need to invest in the district. You know, all these districts that we hold up as, you know, Blue Valley, Blue Springs, these are the great districts. They pay bond money that goes directly to those districts. They invest in their districts. And so if we want a successful district, we as a community have to be willing to invest in that as well.
That's definitely a problem that's going to be, like you said, it's been a long-term problem, but it's something that is definitely going to have to be carefully thought out, because we can't balance the city and the district on the backs of the homeowners. We have to have the business owners pay their fair share in that particular situation. So Monica, back to you. While not every child may go to college, every child can have a career. Does the district need to reevaluate its technical and career training program?
Absolutely. I was actually just in a conversation yesterday with the laborers, 264, and they were talking about how, you know, there are a lot of good paying jobs in the construction industry. And I know that from, I work in an engineering company, and a lot of our professionals are general laborers and, you know, drill rig operators. And I think in the past, it has been this assumption that somehow construction is the backup. If you're not successful in college or you don't do well in school, then there's this backup career that you might be okay in. Like, no, these are first level careers that people can choose to be part of, making good money. And so the district definitely needs to make that clear, offer those opportunities, work with the unions and other operators to try and make sure that they know about those opportunities.
Jay, same question.
So my passion is in education, but my chosen career field is actually in post-secondary success, which includes college and career access and success. So I work primarily for higher education. So I know that college is not for everybody. And my job as a college advisor, one of the things I do is actually try to figure out, you know, what is the best fit for you. With the district, I do think that we should do a lot more career prep and training, and a lot earlier. So again, I have worked in a district, so I have seen, and my students have experienced firsthand, you know, the VOTEC is a great opportunity, but only certain students get to do it. A lot of it's offered starting junior year. If you're behind, you know, you can't do that. So if we kind of implement a little more of this technical and career training throughout their high school career instead of at the end, I think it would be very beneficial.
We've got a caller. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from, what your question or comment is for the school board candidates?
Yes. I live in the inner city. Happy today. It's so great hearing you women with these wonderful thoughts, but only one of you can win. So my hope is that whoever doesn't win will still try to collaborate with the others and help make this school district better and better and better.
Thank you so much, caller. So the caller said that while we've got two great candidates, only one candidate can win. So whichever one of you is not successful in their candidacy, will you still commit to working with KCPS?
So yes, definitely. I mean, while I haven't been a teacher or working directly with the students, I have been supportive of the school board. I worked on Joseph Jackson's campaign when he was running for school board. And so I'll continue to engage with the board in that way if I am not successful in my election. I know it sounds corny, but the children are our future, literally. We have to invest in them. And it's important for the city will never be a world-class city if we keep treating our children like they're an afterthought. We have to make them a priority, and I am definitely committed to continuing to work in the community with the KCPS and with its board to make sure that that continues to happen.
So, Jay, same question.
KCPS is in my blood. I have no choice but to continue to work with KCPS. My family is still in KCPS. And so with that, I not only plan to continue to work with KCPS, but also with the community. I'm not just coming to these organizations to get votes and coming to talk to you to get votes. I am 100% fully integrating myself into these organizations and continuing to work on the betterment of my city as a whole. Education is just one piece of the problems that we face in Kansas City. And so for me, it's very important to me to change the outcome of a lot of the situations that particularly individuals who live in the inner city of Kansas City have to experience. And so I will continue to fight and advocate for Kansas City residents, whether that is on the school board or not.
And so that's definitely a great position to be in, because there is so much work. And as it says, many hands make light work, and we all bring something and different talents to the table. So I'm definitely supportive of that. So, Jay, many people may not know that charter schools are not a part of the public school district, but are independent schools operated by other entities. But we all serve the same children, because that same child may live on 29th Street, and one may go to Lincoln, another one may live on 29th Street, and he goes to Academy Lafayette, one of the other schools. How can we begin to get to the point where charter schools and district schools work together?
You asked the best questions. I'm just going to say that. So as a charter school graduate, I do think it's very important for us to stop this competition narrative. We have to start talking more about collaboration. So one thing that I tell people all the time is that almost every student who is from the inner city of Kansas City steps foot in KCPS. And as a charter school graduate, I can tell you that myself, as well as many of my classmates, were KCPS students at some point. Charter schools don't just pull us out of thin air. Some of them have K-12, but a lot of them don't, right? So the educating Kansas City public school students will benefit educating the city in general. It's going to benefit all of these charter schools, as well as the district and the workforce and everyone else. So we have to start talking about collaboration. Like right now, the bus route. Everywhere I go, every time I talk to people, that is the biggest problem. You know, they literally find out after school that there's not a bus and things like that. We can work with these charter schools to find better routes. Like you said, there are students who both stay on 29th Street that go to two different schools. How can we collaborate and get these students to their destinations in a safe way?
So, Monica, same question.
So, yes, it is a reality that Kansas City is a community of school choice. We're not going to get rid of all the charters, and we're not going to get rid of the district. So what are some ways that we can start collaborating, particularly around things that would impact the financial situation? You know, the transportation is absolutely a big thing. For some reason, right in front of my house is where several different, I don't know if they're charter schools or district schools, but like a bunch of kids get dropped off right in front of my house. And so I see the multiple buses that are going, picking up the kids that are all in the same neighborhood. You know, there are definitely some efficiencies that we're missing out on. But a lot of that is around building up that trust again, because, you know, the way kind of charters came on the scene, it and how the district was positioned at the time, it was a very adversarial relationship. But at this point, it doesn't benefit the children for us to continue with that mindset. How do we work together? How do we collaborate to ensure better student outcomes?
Yes. And as we look at other districts, Lee Summit, when they built Summit Tech, they made it that VoTech, not just for those in Lee Summit, but for those others. Belton Raymore is now doing that. And if we're going to have a viable workforce that has multiple opportunities, we're going to have to find a way to partner and bring those type of efficiencies to schools that are located within the urban core areas. So, Monica, in 2010, the district closed half of its schools. In 2022, the district outlined a blueprint plan 2030 and again looked at closing schools. What needs to be done to stabilize and increase enrollment?
So I think there are a couple things that need to happen. You know, it's interesting, like Jaquita and I actually live like four blocks from one another. So we both know that Askew Elementary was one of the schools that got closed, and there is nothing they're going to be able to do with that. Like because it's in the middle of a neighborhood, so it doesn't have business viability. And, you know, it's probably got asbestos and lead and all sorts of other things. And so, you know, we are directly impacted by that. So I think, and now I just forgot what your question was. I'm sorry.
So, no, the district closed half of its schools.
Oh, about enrollment. Okay.
Yes.
So one is we do need to, if we offer programs that people want, then we're going to be able to bring students back into the district. So we have to just be very intentional about replicating those programs that work, and making those available more widespread so that everyone can have the benefits of those programs.
Jay, same question.
All right. So if you have heard me talk at any point, you've probably heard me say that we have to focus on educating the students that we have in the district. So there is this big, you know, always a big push on bringing more students into the district and, you know, the students that are leaving and worrying about where they're going when we have students here that we must continue to educate. So if we increase the outcomes of our students, it's naturally going to want to lead to people putting their students and their children back in KCPS. So the school choice situation is not going anywhere. It's actually about to get worse. Missouri just passed a law that allows open enrollment for the state starting in 2024. So now the charter schools are not the only schools that will be available to our students. All schools in the district. So, I mean, all schools in the city. So how do we make sure that district students or that students in general want to be in the district? What are we offering them? How are we showing them success? How are we making sure that they know that if they come to the district, their students will have these opportunities? And so in order to do that, we have to increase the achievement. We can't bring people to something that is not flourishing, right? So how do we increase this achievement? How do we increase these overall outcomes? And that's naturally going to increase enrollment.
So, Monica, it seems every day we see another school shooting. You know, we had the six-year-old in Virginia that shot his teacher. There was a shooting the other day in a school, in a private school. How do we keep staff and students safe in a changing environment where the threat is now not based off of inside the building, but it's people trying to access the building and hurt students and staff?
So with the recent incident in that just happened earlier this week, you know, it's interesting how legislators have, you know, very much focused on protecting our children from critical race theory and drag queens, but we continue to let guns flourish. And our communities will not be safe until we are willing to make some bold action on gun control. Now, and I'll be honest, I am a conceal and carry gun owner, but I am also for background checks. I am for eliminating high-capacity, fully automated assault rifles, which is exactly what this person in this last shooting brought into the classroom. Those have served no purpose than to kill a bunch of people quickly. No other purpose than that. And that should not be available to just everyone who happens to have the money to purchase it.
Jay, same question.
This is something that I would like to actually give props to the district for. They have been kind of proactive in preparing for violent situations. And I think it is even before kind of the spurge in school shootings has been going on for a while. But because a lot of our schools are in high crime areas, this is something that, you know, they've just kind of been working on and preparing throughout this time. And so, for example, I went into Central yesterday, I think, and the little thing that they got up that you can't get nowhere without going past security, that's beautiful. Like, it's something that was not there when I worked there 5 years ago. So to know that they are putting the safety of students completely first is great, right? So I think that, you know, we are doing the best that we can just as a nation trying to figure out how we can make our schools more safe for these babies, right? But then also, you know, just in general, I think mental health and emotional health services will also be very helpful in situations like this, whether it's a school shooting or a shooting that happened outside of a school. Kansas City students are very affected by these things.
Yes, it is definitely a sad story, and that's one of the things with as a board member that you have to deal with. You know, I graduated from Central, and I was in middle school when they had the first shooting, and it is definitely something that we have to look at now, how we get our students to and from school, but also keep them in a safe environment and keep the staff safe at the same time. So whatever we can do, and folks, we can't continue to say thoughts and prayers, because thoughts and prayers are not getting there. And all they're doing is leaving our students out there to be the next victim of a school shooting. So as we I've enjoyed this hour. As we get close out, we've got going to get each one of the candidates a two-minute closeout. So Monica started, so we'll go with Jay first.
All right, so first, thank you all for joining us today and for listening to what we have to say in our plans for the school board and school district. So again, my name is Jay Gray. I am running for Subdistrict 4 as a write-in. I am very passionate about the success, not only of KCPS students, but of our community in general. Kansas City, especially those of us who live in the inner city, we have had to kind of fight our way to get the opportunity to have equitable resources, especially when it comes to education. And I'm big on making sure education is equitable for all students. Families should not have to feel that they have to send their students to a signature school or a charter school in order to get a good education. You should be able to know that no matter what school your student goes to in the district, that they are going to get the best quality education that they possibly can.
Ms. Curls.
Thank you very much, Joseph, for allowing us the opportunity to speak to you today. And for all the listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Monica Curls. I am running for Kansas City Public Schools Board of Directors representing Subdistrict 4 because I am passionate about making sure that our students are offered all the opportunities they deserve and that our families are supported in their education journey as well. I believe that I have the experience and skills to be an effective leader on the board of directors. I feel that I have the connections in the community that would allow us to really engage the community in meaningful ways and engage those stakeholders to support the district. We are at a place where we're on the right trajectory, and we just need to be able to continue going forward. And I believe that I have the knowledge and the skills to help continue the district on that trajectory. I think it's really important that we recognize that you have candidates, that you have those options, and just participating in the political process, whether you're writing in my name or just voting for city council, it is so important that you continuously engage in the political process. That means voting, 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 please, please, please. So regardless of who you support, please just make sure you go out and vote April 4th, this coming Tuesday in 5-6 days. This time has gone by really quickly, but we appreciate everybody's support. I would personally appreciate you considering voting for me, Monica Curls, for Subdistrict 4.
So I want to thank Monica and Jay for being our guests today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. This Saturday, April 1st, there will be a community food giveaway at Central High School located at 3221 Indiana Avenue. And this is sponsored by Councilman Brandon Ellington and Redemptorist Center. So they're going to be having, it's going to start at 9 a.m. until the food is gone. They're going to have vegetables. They're going to have meat. So folks, we all know those in our community that are in need, this is a great opportunity for people to come out. And this is from 9 until gone. Usually it's about 9 until about 11. But starting in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, the Kansas City Police Department, in partnership with Hy-Vee, will be giving out on Friday, March 31st from 3 to 6. Make sure you get the correct. Friday, March 31st from 3 to 6 at East Patrol, 2640 East 27th Street. They're going to be giving out their Easter baskets. There will be holiday hams and all the things that you will need. So it's a drive-through event. Enter at 26th in Brooklyn heading east and proceed to KCPD's back parking lot. One ham and food box per car or family. So then also, early voting will end on Monday, April the 3rd at 5 p.m. So if you haven't voted yet, you can go to Union Station today. They will be open this weekend. The whole person here, 37th and Main, is another satellite voting location. If you definitely need to find out, you want to vote early, it's no questions, no excuses. Call the Kansas City Election Board, or you know, to get more information. Or if you're outside of Kansas City, call the Jackson County Election Board to get that information. So for Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson.
Before you wrap up, there's a forum coming up that if people want to hear more from me and Monica.
All right, go ahead.
It's called Parent Power Live. It's hosting another school board forum. So if you would like to hear more from us, please come out to that. It's on April 1st at the Mohart Multipurpose Center, 3200 Wayne. They are serving breakfast from 9 to 9:30, and the forum will start at about 11:30.
So another information, another situation. So join us next week as we start my favorite time of the year. It's Money Smart Conversations. And our guest next week will be Merlin Chapel with the Seeds Expectation. And folks, we're going to talk about credit. I hope everyone has a great day. Stay safe and stay tuned for Signal to Noise.